traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast with Mark LaCour and Paige Wilson. This is the show for busy oil pros who quickly want to keep their finger on the pulse of the industry.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast brought to you by API. This is the show for busy oil pros who want to quickly keep their finger on the pulse of the industry. Thanks to everyone for joining us again for episode 341. I almost said two. This is April 1st, Friday Q&A.
You said again like they've already listened to this once, like it's a...
I know. I meant back to the show. Blah, blah, blah.
Anyway, yeah, great to be back. Before we get into everything, you've heard us talk about the Ben Show, Blue Energy Nation. That's our new podcast that soft launched last week with our two young high school hosts and our board of 8th graders, 11th graders, and it is growing like crazy. The whole concept of this show is to teach energy literacy to our world's young people without politics, without agendas. And so this has actually started a movement, the Ben Movement. So in the show notes, there's two links. One's a link to the actual podcast, which is called The Ben Show. So you can go listen to it. The other one is actually joining Ben, which we're encouraging young people from around the world to do. There's all kinds of fun contests. Like I said, we're going to teach energy literacy without politics or agenda. However, I have an ask, and it's not very often I make an ask to our audience. I need your help. I need access to your subject matter experts, your business leaders, your research scientists, your facilities, your laboratories, anything and everything that my two young people can interview and or tour so they can learn the realities of the oil and gas industry and the benefits to mankind. So please, and how often have you heard me say please on this show page, but please reach out to us. If you work for an oil and gas company, if you work for a service company, if you work for a technology company that supports oil and gas, anything and everything, I need to be able to educate our world's young people by doing interviews. So please reach out so that we can get you connected with the host of The Ben Show and help educate the world on the benefits of oil and gas to mankind and also to the planet. So that's going to be my one ask for the year.
That means you can't ask him to do anything else the rest of this episode.
I'll try. Speaking of trying, we have a review before we get there. Easiest way to leave us a review is to click a link in the show notes, lovethepodcast.com/OGTW. You want to read the review?
No, because I have to read everything else.
Okay. This review is very long. 5 stars. Great show. Love the show. Keep up the good work. From Dan Combs. Thank you, Dan, from the United States. See, you can leave a review without spending 15 minutes in front of the keyboard. We love all of our reviews, especially the 5-star reviews, and we'll take the other ones as well.
Well, you know I will, so. But anyway, let's start off with Ludvig. Oh, which, by the way, happy belated birthday, Ludvig.
Oh, happy birthday, Ludvig. I didn't realize it was his birthday.
Yeah. I pay attention,
good.
I guess.
Obviously, I don't. Love you to death, Luke, though, even though I didn't remember it's your birthday.
So his question is, seems it's time to prepare for a party for episode 400. What will that be? May I suggest a massive Texas barbecue party? Local food, local beer, money to go to charity. If you do it in Europe, I can help out. I don't think we're going to be doing that in Europe, bud.
No, but I do want to go to Europe. We have a lot of people from a lot of different countries in Europe reach out wanting us to bring one of our industry mixers and just come do a live podcast.
The last time we tried to go to Europe, the pandemic occurred. So that makes me a little nervous.
But any of the listeners out there, including Ludwig, if you'd like us to come to Europe, we just have to make it. We have to put it together in a way it makes financial sense. So basically you have to cover our cost of getting there and hauling equipment and everything. But we'd love to do that. The 400th episode, we do need to start planning for that. I don't think I know we're not going to do it in Europe. I do like the idea of doing a barbecue and having local food and local beer. But, you know, when I think about 400, you know what I think of?
Huh?
The movie.
Oh, Gladiator, yeah. Movie. No, that's 300.
Oh, is it 300?
It's 300.
Well, we could do them one up.
That's silly.
Anyway, Ludwig.
Anyway, but we also have to think about what time is that going to be. That's like, you know, how many weeks? That's what math.
Yeah, that's going to be toward the end of the summer.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out. We'll let everybody know.
Eventually.
Which, by the way, if you're listening and you'd like to host us for our 400th episode, you have plenty of time. Reach out to me. Happy to share the details. That is not an ask. That's a suggestion.
It's a suggestion. Okay. Next up is from Sophia Carrera, student investment banking intern at Crutchfield Capital. Her question is, consolidation was the main driver for M&A this year, and it led me to wonder if there will be a potential shift in oil price dynamics. With U.S. majors who have been sweeping up, small producers have autonomy on oil prices. I know oil is a global commodity, and we can't control prices right now, but let's say Exxon, a big operator in the majority of key basins in the U.S., and the U.S. oil follows WTI rather than Brent, a global benchmark, wouldn't they have more control on how oil is priced?
So, Sophia, I like how you're thinking. So the easy answer in that scenario, that hypothesis, would be yes. But Sophia, especially since you're investment banking, let me give you a little insight. The market always wins out. The market wins out over companies, governments, politics, sanctions, everything. Eventually, the market wins out. So you're right in that if some of the large producers in the world would focus on something like WTI, they would be able to produce more WTI and help influence pricing. However, the bigger thing is, what does the market want? What are the refineries, the petrochemical plants, the ethylene crackers, what are they buying? Remember that everything I just rattled off, the refineries, petrochemical plants, ethylene crackers, are set up to maximize yield on a certain type of oil, certain weight, API weight and standard, and that may even be blended. And in a big refinery or petrochemical plant, they may have different blends for different end products. And that is ultimately what is going to determine the price, is the market. So the market always wins out. But I do really like the way you're thinking. Good question.
All right. Next up, we've got from Daniel Brown, small investor. Hi, I'm in Vancouver, Canada. I love your podcast on oil and gas. Like the U.S., Canada has policies hostile to oil and gas, but we're trying to fix them. However, there's a third fossil fuel that doesn't get much informed attention. Both of our countries have vibrant producers of metallurgical and thermal coal. Worldwide, billions of people benefit from the coal industry, which is about the same way as the oil industry. What would you consider more coverage of coal?
So, good question. We've been asked this before. I actually, not that long ago, and I cannot remember the name of the company, but I had somebody reach out to me that were a heavy investor in coal, both in the mining and distribution globally, which, by the way, you would think with all the coal-fired power plants being shut down around the world that the coal use would decline. It hasn't declined globally. It's continuing to grow. And I think the world uses a little bit over 8 million metric tons of coal today. That's going to go up for a while. Anyway, so back to your question, Daniel. I would like to cover coal. Now, it would not be on this show. If this was hydrocarbons this week, we would cover coal a lot more, but it's actually oil and gas. But like I said, we had an investment company not that long ago wanting to work with us, and we brought up the possibility of actually launching a coal podcast, which I actually would really love to do. There's a lot of misinformation about the coal industry, such as coal is always dirty. It's not. There's clean burn technology out there. The other misinformation is coal is formed like other hydrocarbons, and it's not. There's a slight difference in the way it was formed. So anybody out there that would like to sponsor a coal podcast, number one, I'd be all over it, happy to do it. Number two, wouldn't it be fun to do something nobody else expected? Everybody thinks coal is dying. It would be great if OGGN had a podcast on coal. I would love to do it. So to your point, this show itself is not going to cover coal because it's oil and gas this week. However, OGGN would love to have a coal podcast to cover that industry. Thanks for reaching out.
Okay, next up is from John Titor, security at Diamondback Security. Last show, you mentioned how Just Stop Oil protesters killed a patient in an ambulance caught in traffic. What is their plan if we actually cut them off from the oil supply and reserve the final supplies for our descendants? My calculations indicate that 9 out of 10 humans will die within 12 months, restricting human life on Earth, primarily to owners, staff, friends, and family of the industry. I don't think we can do that, bro.
John, you're a little aggressive here.
I get it. Yeah.
So let me be clear. Just Stop Oil actually did not kill somebody. Just Stop Oil delayed an ambulance, which actually caused somebody to die. So they didn't actually pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Their interference was an accessory to somebody passing away. Whether that person would have passed away with or without their interference, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just to be perfectly clear.
We're not doctors.
But you're right in that if we cut humanity off from hydrocarbons, I'm not sure everybody would die, but a lot of people unbelievably quickly would be in survival mode. There would be no lattes at Starbucks and going out to dinner with your friends. It'd be about finding enough food and shelter and water to keep yourself alive.
Yeah, survival mode.
It would be brutal. And it literally would take, I saw this happen in New Orleans when Katrina happened. It would happen way quicker than everybody thought. The other thing is you mentioned about reserving the final supplies for our descendants. Remember, John, there's no final supply. Hydrocarbons are still being made. There's billions of tons of reservoirs we haven't discovered yet. The existing reservoirs that we're tapped into, we don't remove all the oil, remove a small percentage of it. As we go through time, technology will allow us to move more and more. And you put all that together, the sun will run out of hydrogen before the earth runs out of hydrocarbons. There's no worry about running out of anything. I do have to laugh a little bit how you thought it. I tell you what, one of the things that we have been looking at for years, and we've never pulled the trigger on it, would basically be a video show called something like 48 Hours Without Hydrocarbons. And we would take people who don't like our industry and ask them to do something very simple. Just go 48 hours, right? Just go 2 days with no hydrocarbons or no hydrocarbon products or nothing that has been transported by hydrocarbons. And we would just follow them around with the video camera, see how long they last. So if anybody wants to work with us on that, we're up for it. I think it would be a hilarious kind of lifestyle type reality show.
Yeah. And there's also something kind of like that, not to the reality show point, but there's a documentary showing like what it'd be like just 100 days without oil and gas. Yeah. So
you have to tell me what it is. I haven't seen that.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to look into it. Maybe I'll even, once I find it, I'll stick it in the show notes. What do we have next?
Mr. Anchovies. That's his name.
I know. I saw that. I was like, that can't be real. What do you think of the EPA's heightened interest in FCCU and alky units in response to recent history events?
Before I answer your question, wouldn't you feel bad if his name really was Mr. Anchovies? Because
it could be.
Having to go through life with that name is bad enough, and now you're making fun of him because that's his real name.
Well, we don't know that, though.
We don't know that.
We don't know one way or the other.
I suspect that this is somebody having fun with us.
Yeah, I'm looking at the email address.
Well, Breakfast Anchovies, that could really be his email address.
Oh, who knows? Let's not out anyone, okay?
FCCU, Fluid Catalytic Cracker Unit, basically what everybody else calls a cat cracker. What's going on is the EPA has, for years, have been cracking down, pun intended, on emissions from petrochemical plants and refineries. The EPA is just actually, I think this month finally came out with the final action around this actual subject. So what's going on is the EPA is cracking down on cat units, cat crackers. Then that's a piece of heavier equipment in the refinery used to convert, if I remember right, the really sour, heavy portion of the crude oil to much lighter petroleum products, things like propane and stuff like that, gasoline, stuff like that. I'm sorry, not propane. It converts that heavy, sour crude to the lighter things, which is like gasoline. Anyway, backing up for Mr. Anchovy's question, I 100% think this is government overreach. Our refineries in the U.S. are the cleanest refineries in the world. We produce the cleanest, by far, refined products in the world. Our refineries are very good stewards of their environment. Remember, you can't move a refinery.
Right.
And we haven't built a new one other than the Davis refinery, which is a bit of an experiment. We haven't built a new refinery in this country since, I think, the 70s. And so they have no choice but to work in their local communities and their local states. And if you look at what's happened in California with the refineries, the states have basically taxed them out of existence. And the rest of the refineries in the U.S. don't want to do that. So they're very self-conscious about their impact to the local communities, their impact to their environment. So they're good stewards of the environment. So I 100% I think this is EPA's overreaching and doing things they shouldn't do. Like I said, I think they just had a final judgment this month. I am just waiting for the elections to get here and get over with.
I'm just ready for this stupid eclipse to be done with. I'm so over.
By the time people hear this, the eclipse will be over with.
Thank God.
So if civilization fell because of the eclipse, then sorry. I suspect that life will go on. And that's kind of a joke because all the doom and gloom people are out there talking about the eclipse.
They're like, it's not an eclipse and it's apocalypse. I'm like, okay, get a life. All right, next one. It's from Scott Dennis, who is an individual.
I just realized, I thought you were being funny. That's literally what he went down. Thank you, Scott. You've cleared up that confusion.
I love the show. At my home in New York, I am paying Con Edison $750 a month for energy. And this is up from the $310 a month in 2019 and is what we in the state are dealing with. From where I sit, state gov has allowed Con Ed to increase rates by 141% to pay for infrastructure, despite the fact that it is a private company that should borrow money like any other for improvements. I would be grateful for Mark's take on this and ideally an interview with Con Ed C-Suite to explain it like I am in grade school.
So, Scott, I actually reached out to the head of Con Edison, not expecting them to reply back to me. As of April 7th, 2024, I have not heard back from them. I, too, would like to interview them. If it happens, it will happen on The Balance Point, the perfect show for this. Like I said, don't expect them to reach back out to me. You know, Con Ed is regulated by the state, but I agree with you, Scott. If they're allowed to go up on their rates to their end users, at the same time, they're using that money to build more infrastructure, and I happen to know that a lot of that infrastructure they're building with has its eye earmarked or its eye on renewables. I don't think you should have to pay for that. I think you should have to borrow money like every other company does out there. And the money they borrow should be loaned to them by financial institutions that figure out if it's a good investment or not. Unfortunately, that's not what's going to happen. You're subsidizing their growth. You're subsidizing their growth in renewables. Once again, I love renewables, but they have their place. They're not a good fix everywhere. They are not a good fix for the Upper East part of the country because the amount of daylight is small, the wind doesn't always blow, and it gets really, really cold. Natural gas, a perfect solution. However, we know that we can't build pipelines from Pennsylvania literally right down the street to the rest of the East Coast. And so a lot of the East Coast is buying natural gas from the Caribbean, like they somehow think the Caribbean produces natural gas. That Caribbean natural gas is actually coming from Russia, which is a mess in itself. But 100%, Scott, I agree with you. You should not be paying for their infrastructure. And if you are forced to pay for the infrastructure by rate increases, which is what you are doing, you should have a say in what that infrastructure is, which right now you don't. So this is a mess. And the East Coast, especially the Upper East Coast of the U.S., politically has allowed themselves to get to a point where you're having rolling blackouts already. If the weather's severe, either summer or winter, you know, there's not energy to keep people warm or keep people cold. And unfortunately, Scott, it's going to get worse. The fix, vote for the right people, vote for the right governors, let your voices be heard, and let them know that this is just not right.
Yep. Next up is from Ryzen Shardotti. Hi, I love the podcast and I learn so much every time I tune in. Do you guys have plans to visit Alaska? I would love to host a podcast of yours at one of our next events. Please shoot me an email if this is even a possibility. Thanks.
And it is. And I shot Ryzen an email. Haven't heard back, but let him know that we would happily come to Alaska, depending on what time of year it was.
Yes, that I don't do cold very well.
And once again, if you want us to come up there, it just has to make financial sense for us. If we can figure out a way to cover our travel costs and to cover our day rates and haul our equipment and everything. And the other thing is, I think you're probably the 10th or 12th person in the last couple of years to ask us come specifically to the North Slope, to ask us come to Alaska. So we'd love to do it. If the listeners out there want to help us with this, reach out. And I would love for us to bundle everything up, including Paige, and come up to Alaska and see our fans up there.
I don't even know if I have a coat heavy enough for that.
You don't.
I know. Okay. Steve Blight says, hi, Mark. I've been enjoying your and Paige's weekly podcast. Thank you. I'm writing to ask for advice. I am a Navy pilot by trade. My grandfather, who I never met before he passed, was an oil geologist in the West Texas fields back in the day. I've been told he's in the Hall of Fame out there. He secured some mineral interest, and the time for me to take over and be a good steward of what my grandfather started. I don't know where to start. Any chance you could give me a steer? My best.
Steven, I'm getting older, so I'm not going to start the whole Navy Marine Corps thing that goes on back and forth between squids. I'm just not going to even start that. However,
I'm not going to start anything, but I'm also going to call you a squid.
And you know, Steve, I love you to death. I love the Navy. So I'm not quite sure what you're asking. If you're asking, how do you step into a bunch of mineral rights that your grandfather owned and make sure you don't screw it up? Before you do anything, figure out what part, you said West Texas. Well, West Texas is bigger than most countries. Figure out in which part of West Texas those mineral rights are in, and then look up AAPL, which is something associated.
American Association of Landmen.
Petroleum Landmen, yeah.
Yeah, Petroleum Landmen.
The landman, the man stands for management, not gender. These are the people that help negotiate and understand those mineral right leases in every part of the country is different as far as fees and regulations and rules. These men and women know this. So find the closest AAPL to wherever the mineral rights are. Reach out to them and tell them the same story you just told us, that you're former Navy, you inherited from your grandfather, you don't know what's going on. They will not steer you wrong, and there'll be a place for them to start. Now, if I'm reading this wrong and your grandfather actually has to operate in oil fields, you're going to need to do the same thing. Still reach out to APL because at the very minimum, you need to understand your mineral rights and what your choices are and what your obligations are. But now you need to find a small independent operator that's about your size. And once again, I promise you, even though you don't know them, this industry is like a family. You reach out to them, let them know that you're Navy, that you don't know what's going on. Your grandfather left this to you and they'll step in and they'll help you. Bottom line, Stephen, welcome to the oil field.
Mm-hmm.
Glad to have you.
Absolutely. Okay, so next up we have Jessica Healy, who is a graduating student and works at the Blue One. That could mean two things. Anyway, longtime listener and huge fan. Paige, I am very jealous in a good way of your self-confidence and sense of worth. I am graduating this May and already have a job as a field engineer with one of the large service companies. What strategies did you use to assert yourself and be taken seriously in a field dominated by men? Keep up the great work. Well, I'm a tomboy. I grew up with guys. So I just, when they talk shit, I talk shit. That's just kind of how I've always been. It's very few and far between where I feel like threatened or less than because I'm talking to a guy.
Yeah. You know, other thing, Jessica, and that's a real good point that Paige made. She grew up with male friends. She still has a lot of male friends. She grew up with brothers. And guys are different. If you haven't been exposed to that, there's a couple things you need to be aware of. When a guy makes fun of you, he likes you. And
probably.
I don't mean that in a romantic way. I mean that in a friendly way.
Yeah. Right?
But on the outside, if you don't know that, it's like, man, why is this guy making fun of me? And it could hurt your self-esteem and make you think they're making fun of you. They're not. They do that to people they like. The other thing is don't shy away from stuff. You know, no matter which generation you are, if you're a man out in the oil field, if you see a woman trying her best, you then 100% respect her and what she's trying to do. It doesn't matter whether she can accomplish or not, but as long as she's trying her best. And then, and boy, I'm going to get a little bit of hate mail around this. I don't know if you're the type, but don't try your best to handle any differences you have with your male coworkers with them. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a line that can be crossed. If that line is crossed, you most certainly go to your supervisor or HR. But if that line is not crossed and something is said or something happens that you don't like, try to handle it with them and explain why you don't like it and why you don't appreciate it. I'm telling you, if you're straight up in front with the men that you're working with, understand that if they poke fun of you, it's because they like you and do your best. Not only will you fit right in, they'll be your best buds forever. They will protect you. They'll watch out for you. They'll have your back. Just, you know, treat them like they're your female friends.
Not only that, this is probably kind of a Doug kind of thing to say, but don't date anybody at your company.
Yeah, that's a good one.
People will lose respect if things go awry and it'll start a bunch of drama. But I've gotten to see that a whole lot throughout my entire career. And it usually doesn't end well and respect gets lost. So, but I've never had to deal with that.
That applies, I really think.
Across the board.
Yeah.
Really in any industry.
But also any sex. So if you're guys out there, don't try to start dating some of the women that you're working with. It's not going to end well.
I mean, I've seen one relationship actually last ever, so.
I know one that's really good.
Oh, good. So. All right. So next up we have Jonathan Daly, project manager at McDermott. Mark and Paige.
Accountant. Project accountant.
Project accountant. Straight. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Mark and Paige, I stumbled across your show about a year ago. I've listened to every single episode. you got a lot of time on your hands. I am not in the industry. However, I love your podcast and both the education you provide and humor. This is going to be a newbie question, but I hear you talk about the upstream and downstream. Can you explain what that actually means? Oh, and your merchandise store rocks. I've managed to piss off both my girlfriend's parents and several strangers while wearing your shirts. Love it. That's awesome.
Jonathan, you scored right there. Anytime you get somebody a little iffed off by wearing one of OGGN's shirts, that's success in our book. And by the way, people, I'm joking, right? I don't necessarily want you to piss people off by wearing our shirts.
No, but it makes people ask questions.
It makes people think, too.
Yeah.
Okay, pretty simple stuff. The industry is divided up into four segments. Upstream, which is also called exploration and production, or E&P, is getting the oil out of the ground. So upstream is things like offshore rigs, onshore rigs, subsea installations, FPSOs, tank storage, anything that has to do with the business of getting oil or hydrocarbons, I should say, out of the ground, oil and gas, right? Midstream is moving it. So midstream is things like pipelines, rail, super tankers. Anytime the business is moving those hydrocarbons, that is the midstream part of the business. Downstream is taking those hydrocarbons and turn it into products that you can sell. So downstream is what most people think of: fuel refinery, petrochemical plants. But downstream is also things like fertilizer. You know, 6% of the world is fed with fertilizer made from the ammonia strip from natural gas. Downstream is also things like plastics. Huge, you know, I think it's 97.9% of all plastics made are made from hydrocarbons. Downstream is also things like, think of the Mobil 1 race team by ExxonMobil. That race team is there to promote things like Mobil 1, which is a brand at Mobil Oil. So ExxonMobil's race team is part of downstream. It's help of their marketing. So that's what downstream is, taking hydrocarbons and turning it to stuff you can sell and selling it. And it's also things like retail gas stations. Service is what people get tripped up on. Service is basically the companies that do work in the oil and gas industry but produce no hydrocarbon products themselves. So Baker Hughes, Schlumberger, Halliburton, they do a lot of the work in the industry, a lot of the work, but they don't actually produce any hydrocarbons. Now, I know I'm going to get some hate mail because as you go through time, both Halliburton, Schlumberger, and Baker several times have owned operating fields, but they owned it as a joint venture as a way to do research and development on their tools. Their primary goal was not to produce hydrocarbons, although it was a byproduct of what they did. But the service companies are the companies that do work in the oil and gas industry, but the service companies are also companies you may never think of. So every offshore rig or almost every offshore rig in the world needs communications. And that's either things like VSAT or in the Gulf of Mexico, fiber loops with microwave shots. So there's companies that do nothing but those communications. That's also part of oilfield services. Doctors and dentist office. You know, several parts of the world, somebody like Chevron builds a facility to extract hydrocarbons. They build a wall around it to protect their people and their assets. And in that walled compound is grocery stores, bowling alleys, and doctors and dentist offices. And there's companies that do nothing but staff those doctors and dentist offices and stand them up in the walled compound to service the employees, in this case, Chevron. And so that's also part of the service industry. And things like entertainment, you know, video on demand. There are companies that do nothing but provide video on demand to the workers in the oil and gas industry when they're off their shift. And that's also part of the service industry. So that's it. The industry is divided up to upstream, midstream, downstream, and service. Great question, Jonathan. And thanks again for pissing off your girlfriend's parents.
Okay, and the next one's from Anonymous. This podcast should win an Academy Award. Both of you make it easy to understand complex things and don't shy away from the hard questions. And I love your chemistry together on the mic. My only ask is that we try and get back to weekly releases. I have had some withdrawal symptoms when you miss a week. LOL. Which, I'm going to go ahead and address that. I actually went and looked. We have not missed a week this year.
Oh, that's awesome.
Now, this might be a little late because I've got health issues that I'm dealing with currently. But, I mean, first quarter, pretty good.
Yeah, so quit giving us grief, people. You were right to give us grief for the last 3 years because we were busy. We missed episodes, but I didn't realize Paige went back and looked.
I went and looked, and I was like, I'm pretty sure we've been on time. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're batting 100 this year so far. Fingers crossed that we keep doing the same thing.
Yeah, we're trying.
And by the way, just to be perfectly clear, Paige is suffering right now, but she's going to be okay.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's...
The way you said it sounded kind of morbid.
I'm totally dying. I mean, no, she's not. But aren't we all?
Oh, God, we were getting some feedback on that one.
Anyway, speaking of hard questions, if a company faces allegations of unethical or illegal business practices, how would you respond to restore the public trust and address potential legal consequences? Obviously, there's a reason I am asking this and why I'm an anonymous. Appreciate any insight you can give.
What a heavy question.
Yeah.
So, two different ways to look at this. So, it depends if it's a public or private company.
Yeah.
At a high level, both of them should do the same thing. Both of them should own it, be open and honest, including what they don't know, right? Now, with a public company, the problem with doing that in excess is you're affecting shareholder value, especially around things that you don't know. Mm-hmm. And so there's some moderation there. Both private and public companies should have a good crisis communications person or team. And if you don't, you can hire one, you can outsource one to help make sure you craft those communications well. But if you're trying to restore public trust, the biggest thing you can do is be totally, brutally honest.
Yeah.
Like I said, including the parts you don't know. Now, the legal consequences, unfortunately, and I'm guessing you're here in the U.S., unfortunately, this has become just a sue happy culture here in this country. And so, unfortunately, I can't believe I'm going to say this. The second thing you need to do after you find the crisis communication team, maybe the first thing, is lawyer up. If somebody is suing you for something, if you did something unethical or illegal.
I just have so many questions, Mark. This is so, like, I need to know more to be able to answer this better.
Well, but still, if no matter what's going on, you need to make sure you have good counsel to protect you and the interests of your company. Because remember, if something bad happens to your company, it's not just you and your company. It's all your employees may lose their jobs, right? So you have a responsibility to handle this well. Open, honest communication. Make sure you get the right legal people involved. Then, to Paige's point, it depends on what extreme it was.
Yeah.
There's one set of responses as far as communications and a legal response when, you know, somebody accidentally spilt some crude in the Gulf of Mexico and didn't report it, right? Mm-hmm. That should never happen. If it happens, you got caught, you should be busted for it. That's a certain level of impact to our world. It's a different level of impact if by not doing the right thing or looking the other way, somebody got hurt or somebody died, right? Big difference in degree. So it also depends on the degree. But I've watched company after company after company have something happen to them that if they would have been honest and open about it up front, they still would have, you know, taken their knocks. They still would have gotten fined or in trouble. They still would have been sued, right? But they would have made it as a company. But I've watched companies try to hide stuff.
Yeah. You remember that company they got, they couldn't produce anything for like 6 months?
Yeah.
Yeah. Stuff like that. That's so wild to me.
Yeah. And so it's when you try to hide stuff and you try to mislead the public or others, or especially like misleading shareholders and employees, is when it's going to be really bad. And there may not be saving you from the legal consequences. So, you know, to Paige's point, without any more information, I'm not sure what else I could tell you. I will tell you this much, though, writing in with something this heavy and this important, you know, I hope things work out for you. Whatever position you're in, whatever company you're working for, just make sure that before you decide to do anything, you know, do that thing where, what would your grandmother say?
Mm-hmm. Right?
For you personally in your career, it may be that you need to leave the company in order to not get caught up in something bigger, depending on where you are in the hierarchy. And I know none of that is good, but, you know, sometimes, to your point, sometimes we have to answer the heavy questions with heavy answers.
Yeah.
Good luck to you, Anonymous.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, by the way, I did find that documentary I was telling you about. It's called The World Without Oil. It was done in 2016. So you can either find it on YouTube or PBS, it looks like. So
throw a link in the show notes for
you. Yeah, yeah, we'll do. Okay, so last one is from Justin Thibodeau, facilities manager at Callon Petroleum. You had a listener write in saying if they wanted to do a crawfish boil with OGGN in Louisiana. Well, what, like, to have the same offer, but in Mississippi? I don't really care. I heard crawfish. I'm there. What do we need to do to make this happen? Love the show, and both of you are rock stars in my world. Thank you. And I've seen it more than once when I pull up to it on a site where the entire crew is listening to you guys on lunch break. That's awesome. So if we do this crawfish bowl, expect to be signing some autographs.
Justin,
that's so awesome.
I think you just made us both blush.
I am blushing.
I think it's cool that your guys out in the field are listening to us during their lunch break. I don't even know what to say that. Nobody's ever brought that up before. So guys, listen to us in the field. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
I hope you enjoy your lunch.
Yeah. Justin, we're all over this. I'm going to reach out to you directly. Would love to do a crawfish boil. You know, Paige and I are both from Louisiana, so we can come show you Mississippians how to do it properly. Well, he has the last name Tim. I'm pretty sure he knows how to boil crawfish. Yeah. Right? He's a transplant. Or maybe that's just his job for, that's his hitch out there. But would love to do this, and would love to do it in Mississippi. I'm going to reach out to you directly, and we'll see if we can make this happen.
Okay. Your turn.
Why is it my turn?
Because you got to do This Week in Petroleum.
You mean the famous This Week in Petroleum history? Speaking of winning Academy Awards, I think we should win an Academy Award for this. Guess what?
No.
April 1911, the very first gusher in what state?
Texas
happened at the South Red River border with Oklahoma near Electra, Texas. Clayco Oil Pipeline Company, Clayco number one well, launched an oil boom that would last for decades. As the news of the gusher spread through town, people thought it was an April Fool's joke and didn't take it seriously until the oil fell down on them and they were covered in crude oil. That's not in there. I just made that up. April 1st, 1986, which I remember this. oil price collapse. Oil dropped down to $10 a barrel, actually slightly below that. It was a mess. Actually, I think it was in college. Yeah, I think I was still in college when that happened. So that was one of the worst upstream oil downturns I have ever seen. I lived through that. It was miserable. I went to college in a town called Lafayette, Louisiana. Before the crash in 86, there were Lamborghinis and Ferraris in the parking lot. After the crash, there was nobody in the parking lot. People lost businesses. People lost homes. It was brutal. Same thing happened here in Houston. Same exact thing. And actually all over the world. So let's hope we never have a downturn of that magnitude again. April 2nd, 1980, President Carter signs crude oil windfall profit tax. This was interesting when I saw this because I didn't realize that somewhere in the past somebody had done the same thing again. Well, somebody did. It was American President Jimmy Carter. I don't need to go into the details. We all know what a windfall profit tax is or was or still is. 1951, April 1st, North Dakota oil well taps into Wilson Basin after 8 months of drilling in snowstorms. So we don't have to do here in Texas.
Oh, thank God. That's why I live down here.
They actually tapped in, made the first hit. It was very productive. They drilled down to 10,500 feet. And while the blizzard was still going, they perforated at 11,000 feet and 11,640 feet using shaped charges at 4 holes per foot. And the new industry in North Dakota was born. Then April 5th, 1860, inspired by Edward Drake's first oil well in Titusville, Pennsylvania, a newly formed company discovered oil field along the Algae River and Oil City, which is the big growth of the Pennsylvania oil industry. Then 1976, the Strategic Oil Reserves was formed and commercialized. President Gerald Ford signed the Naval Petroleum Reserve Production Act, which was for the first time allowed full commercial development of the nation's 3 naval petroleum reserves. Before this was signed, our Navy, hats off to our seamen out there, actually had petroleum reserves for the Navy, but not for the whole country. And President Ford and his cabinet decided the whole country needed that security, which we do. Although today,
kinda,
our petroleum reserve is on empty. Well, not empty, but really close. That's the week of petroleum history. Speaking of really cool stuff to do, go sign up for our 2 newsletters. Wherever
you don't have any more asks.
It's a recommendation. Okay. Not I recommend you go sign up for our 2 newsletters. I recommend you sign up for the Sunday update first, all gets events newsletter second. I also recommend that you pay attention to the weekly rig count, which is.
Which is funny because I forgot they changed the format of everything. And I was like, oh no, it's missing and I have to come up with it now. But I figured it out. So the United States is at 620. So we're down 1 from prior. Let's see. We're down 15 in Canada at 136. And then internationally, we're up 13 at 971.
All right. You know the deal. Go online. Just sign up. Follow us on LinkedIn. Don't forget my ask, my one ask for this show, which is for Blue Energy Nation, for our young people's podcast. We need to be able to interview your company's leaders, scientists, engineers, to help educate our world's young people on the value of hydrocarbons. So please, people, respond to me. Help me get your company's people, facilities, everything set up so that my 2 high school hosts can come learn more about the oil and gas industry.
And which are Shia and Kennedy.
Yep, and they're killing that. Which, by the way, I didn't even tell you this, Paige. As of now, and it's very early to tell, but as of now, they now have the record for our fastest growing podcast.
Good.
Ever. Yeah. And listen to it. It's not just for young people. It is really good. All right. You want myself or any of our experts to come speak at your event, do a keynote, do a live podcast. We're doing a whole bunch of that this year. We still have some spaces left. Just reach out. Happy to share the details. First Friday Q&A, like you just heard. Remember, ask a question. We'll give you a big shout out if we use your question on the air. The goal is not to stump Paige and I. Ready to get out of here?
Yep.
Remember, folks, do great work, pay it forward, and we will see you next time.
Tune in next week for another informative and entertaining episode of Oil and Gas This Week podcast, a production of the Oil and Gas Global Network. Learn more at oggn.com.